This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Biden pardoning son Hunter in his gun and tax evasion cases. The president issuing the announcement last night. President-elect Donald Trump naming loyalist Kash Patel as his choice to head up the FBI. That announcement also made over the weekend. The U.S. Supreme Court this morning hearing arguments on vaping at issue, whether the FDA has the authority to ban Sweden candy-flavored vape pens. Those vapes are extremely popular among young people. Later this week, the first openly transgender attorney will argue in favor of allowing gender-affirming surgery for minors. A very snowy couple of days has led to a massive cleanup.
Winter storm warnings still up for all of the west coast there of Michigan into, say, Erie. We're 1 to 2 feet south and east of Erie. Syracuse this morning is getting one of those heavy bands, and they're going to deal with it. Most of this is for the next 24 hours.
ABC's Ginger Z, frigidly cold air moving into the upper Midwest, could be in the single digits soon. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chairman Ben Wickler launches a bid to lead the Democratic National Committee. In a statement issued Sunday, Wickler said the Democratic Party needs to be stronger to take on President-elect Donald Trump and Republican extremists. The 43-year-old Wickler has been state Democratic Party chair since July 2019, during which time Wisconsin Democrats have won 9 of the last 12 statewide races. Wickler said he's helped transform the party into an organizing, fundraising, and winning machine. Current DNC chair Jamie Harrison is not seeking re-election. DNC members will elect a new chair on February 1st. Work on request for the state budget gets underway this month. Terry Barr reports.
There's a group focusing on the importance of the arts in Wisconsin, and it's getting ready to advocate for more support during the upcoming legislative budget process. Create Wisconsin is a nonprofit based in Madison and trying to expand opportunities in the arts across the state.
It's an investment in people, businesses, organizations, and communities. People are really hungry for that authentic, unique. That's what we try to nurture and to assist.
Ann Katz is the director of Create Wisconsin. She says the Badger State remains in last place when it comes to arts funding and support.
Everybody wants their community to be vibrant and healthy and have people visit and live there. And so we try to help people figure out what they need, and then we figure out how we can help them.
A post-election recap and pre-budget planning gets underway next week. Learn more about Create Wisconsin. Go to createwisconsin.org. I'm Terry Barr.
Breaks of sun later, a high of 28. Tonight, partly cloudy and chilly with a low of 15.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Bucks have a winning record. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks with a 124-114 win over the Wizards this weekend. So the Bucks now with a record of 10-9, thanks to a 6-game winning streak. I asked Giannis Antetokounmpo, what's different about the team now after that 1-6 start to the season?
We know how to win games. Guys kept saying the same thing, like, doesn't matter, just win the game, want to go watch film, be better.
College hoops, the Badgers open up their Big Ten schedule tomorrow night against Michigan at the Kohl Center. Wisconsin undefeated at 8-0. NFL, the Packers getting ready to play the Lions in Detroit this Thursday night. The Badgers football team not invited to a bowl game after their first losing season in 22 years. Where is this program at?
It's really tough to kind of say where we are. Obviously, we're not in a good place. We're 5-7, and, you know, really, we're just not even playing well. We got a job to do. We got a job to prepare guys to get ready to play a game, and then their job is to play the game. Unfortunately, we haven't done that for quite a while.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy with a few flurries this morning, gradually becoming partly cloudy by later this afternoon. Our high today, 29. The wind northwest at 5 to 15. Tonight, 17. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 29 on Wednesday. Mostly cloudy, breezy with light snow and a high in the mid-30s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 17.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding a unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Dom Salvia.
Just PS, Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey, good morning. You're listening to Matinair on Air. Jane and Greg are off today, stretching out the long weekend, which they so earned so well over this long stretch leading up to the election and the sad aftermath of the election. So I hope they're enjoying themselves. I hope they are recharging their batteries. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the former editor and publisher at the Progressive Magazine and formerly the executive director at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. It's nice to be with you today. If you want to join our conversation all across the Civic Media Radio Network, the number to call is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You know, I thought I'd start the day with a little poem. I love poetry, and I was reading this book called Garden Time by W.S. Merwin, and the title of the poem is appropriately December Morning. It's short, so you won't suffer too much. Here we go. How did I come to this late happiness? As I wake into my remaining days, another morning in my life with Paula, his wife, taking me by surprise like the first one. I know it's rash to speak about happiness with the fates so near that I can hear them. But this morning, even the old regrets seem to have lost their rancor. And I forget that I'm almost blind, and I see the piles of books I was going to read next. There they wait, like statues of sitting dogs, faithful to someone they used to know. But happiness has a shape made of air. It was never owned by anyone, and it comes when it will in its own time. Love that poem. Maybe it's just an old man poem, and that's why it resonates with me, but it is a December morning, a cold and a little blustery, snowflakey Monday morning here in Wisconsin. And I wanted to give a little advice before we get into politics, because I'm a bird watcher, too, as well as a poetry lover and a political guy. The advice is the birds are real hungry right now. It's hard for them to find food. When it gets below freezing, they need a lot of fat. So please put some suet out. If you got, suet in a suet cage, a cake of suet, that's great. But even on top of that, something better, chop up some of that suet cake or butcher suet and put some on the ground, because a lot of birds don't want to come to the hanging suet. They prefer to eat on the ground. And if there is a bully bird like a blue jay or a big woodpecker on the suet, they can't get to the suet anyway. So throw a bunch of it on the ground and you'll be amazed at the birds that come and how welcome they'll be. And they'll bring you happiness, as the poet said. We need to find happiness. So what I wanted to do right now is offer you a flavor of Jane's take herself on right-wing radio. I've got a podcast on Civic Media called Wisconsin Forward Podcast. And in an upcoming one, we're going to talk about the dominance of right-wing radio in Wisconsin. And I interviewed Jane for that. So, Kelvin, if you don't mind, let's just play that and let our listeners hear from Jane, even though she's not here in the studio with us today. Let me ask you, you've been in radio a long time.
I have.
And right-wing radio talk radio here in the Milwaukee area played a big role in Wisconsin's politics. Do you want to talk about that?
Right-wing talk radio became purely the purview of the right because, at least in my estimation, the left did not see that as a threat. And there are also other things you have to remember that what happened to the radio industry over the course of the decades. So they got rid of the fairness doctrine in the mid-80s. In the mid-90s, they got rid of the rule that limited ownership for any one company of the number of media properties they could own in any one community. So when they allowed these companies to start buying up not only the newspaper, but the television station, and I'm going to buy two radio stations, and the whole logic behind that was this was going to make media and radio so much better, Matt, because you'd have all of these little stations that could now do reggae, you know, and they wouldn't have to play top 40 music or rock and roll music or you know, there's just going to be so much more freedom. That is not what happened, even remotely. The only people this deregulation did good things for were the people who were buying up radio stations and then consolidating everything and getting rid of half of the staff and running three stations now with a staff of one. So that whole premise that this was going to bring more opinions and more views did not happen. And like I said, I think the left was lazy about appreciating the impact that this was going to have, especially when Rush Limbaugh, who is probably the standard bearer for this, I think when he started, he sold himself more as an entertainer as opposed to a serious political commentator. That changed. As he got more powerful, he used that as a much bigger bludgeon and, in my estimation, led the way to the coarse discourse that we have now among people who are elected officials. Rush Limbaugh is the one who, I believe it was called Sandra Fluke, a slut because she wanted to have birth control. So this kind of paved the way for that kind of rhetoric and that kind of hateful framing of the other. And again, us othering each other only helps them.
And while you were in radio at the time, it must have been kind of horrifying for you to hear what was coming out.
Well, I was in music radio, but the equivalent for music radio were shock jocks and on rock stations. And they would say the most vile, revolting sexual jokes. And that was big in the 80s. And then Howard Stern, of course, became the standard bearer for that. I have never listened to Howard Stern. I've been told many times, oh, he's changed and it's much better. And I, okay, that's fine. That was never my cup of tea. That was never my kind of humor.
I heard him when he was getting going in 1980, 1981, 1982, when I was living in D.C. And it was just unbelievable, the stuff he was able to say on the radio. And then politically here in Wisconsin, right-wing talk radio, Charlie Sykes et al., what role did they play?
It was massive. It really was massive. And I have to give credit where credit is due because some of those hosts did a remarkable job of taking facts, turning them completely around and upside down, and ending up blaming the Democrat and not the Republican. It was a really impressive feat to watch some of these guys turn everything upside down and inside out so that their guy came off looking good and the other person was the demon. It was really something to witness. I'm not quite sure I would ever be that mentally flexible, so I guess I have to give credit where credit is due. But there were lots of falsehoods and lies and smears that then became just accepted as truth, especially because I listen to this guy and I trust him.
And the repetition, the force of repetition.
Over and over, the pounding of the messages, keep it short, keep it simple, repeat it over and over. Joseph Goebbels was the one who said that about propaganda, and that's what we're still living with today.
Mm-hmm. And is it liberating for you to be on civic media and be able to speak your mind in a way that maybe you couldn't before?
I cannot tell you how grateful I am for this opportunity. Seriously, Like you said, I've been in this business for four decades. Most of it was in music radio. But even then, I was never overtly political. I certainly had a lot of opinions, which was going to be not a shock to anyone who's ever worked with me for any length of time. But that wasn't my role at that time. So I do find it immensely freeing to be able to say what I think and hopefully to get people to think and laugh and learn at the same time. I don't believe in lecturing people to get them to my side. I don't think that's effective. I want us to like each other, and I want us to learn things together, and then I want us to appreciate things together. And once we have a little bit of that back and forth going, then we can talk about harder things and hopefully come to some place in the middle, because I don't believe everyone is always right or always wrong.
What role did right-wing radio, Charlie Sykes, and all those guys play politically here in Wisconsin?
You know, every time I see Charlie Sykes today, you know, I remember when Charlie Sykes was first leaving, and I called in the last day he was there. He says, "Oh, it's Earl." You know, I said, "Well, you know, Charlie, I remember you and Mark Billing, Northridge, if you know anything about Milwaukee, was a viable, viable place, and it was an anchor. And there were businesses everywhere. It was a very viable, viable middle-class community. And Northridge was the anchor. And a guy named Jesse Anderson, a white guy, killed his wife. And he blamed it on black guys. I don't know if you remember the story. And he got on the airway, him and Mark Billing, and denigrated Northridge and told people, it's unsafe, don't go there. Northridge died. The business community in a vibrant city like Northridge, middle class, brown deer neighborhood, died. And I remember saying to Charlie Sykes on the day that he was getting ready to leave, you know, you helped destroy a vibrant community, a vibrant neighborhood. I remember telling Mark Billing the exact same thing. They tried to weasel out of it, but they had that kind of influence and that kind of power, and they use, you know, racial overtones to gain their popularity. Well, it's easy to do that when, again, the racial makeup is 95% to 5%. And so when there aren't enough black people to go around in the state of Wisconsin for people to get to know one, right? I mean, so they go by what they hear. And there are people, unfortunately, in this society who make money off of those kinds of things.
So those were two excerpts from an upcoming podcast that I'm doing for Civic Media. It's called the Wisconsin Forward Podcast. That podcast will be on the role of right-wing media here in Wisconsin. And it was great to hear both from Earl Ingram and from Jane about that. And, you know, Jane made the point about deregulation. Reagan and Bill Clinton brought us deregulation. And that deregulation has led to the rise of right-wing radio. And Jane was right. They took advantage of it, and we didn't. We got to change that. We'll be right back after a short break to talk about that and also talk about maybe the pardon that the president just gave his son. We'll be right back on Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you, too, can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute.
A lot of financial chatter is focused on the stock market. Is it up? Is it down? Is it a bull market? Is it a bear market? The Dow just hit a record high. But how much should people like me and you really care about these daily updates? The answer? Not very much. Most of those daily highs and lows come from small-scale events that just don't mean that much to the broader U.S. economy. And the stock market is not the economy. For most of us, long-term growth is what really matters for retirement. Now, if you are one of the richest 10% of Americans who own 93% of all the stock, you can ignore this message. But for the rest of us, we're going to get more done by keeping an eye on our spending and savings than we are by paying attention to Wall Street. For more practical money tips, visit workmoney.org. Till next time, take good care.
The Todd Almaus Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Almaus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning, Matt Rothschild, subbing in here for Jane on Matt and Air on Air. Jane and Greg are off today. They'll be back tomorrow. They have wisely decided to take this long Thanksgiving weekend and extend it by another day, and they certainly earned it. I'm Matt Rothschild. We heard Jane there talking about the role of right-wing radio, and I want to know what you, and Earl, for that matter, let me know what you think about that. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You can also call and weigh in on the pardon that Joe Biden just gave his son. We have a lot of people on the text line that I wanted to read out their views. Tom was saying, you know, Jane was correct about the role of right-wing radio and the Democrats didn't take it seriously enough. You know, I guess they didn't think fireside chats were the way to go, he says. But even, you know, Biden wasn't even doing fireside chats. One of the problem with Biden, even though I thought he was a more progressive president than I thought he would be at the start, was he didn't really communicate with the American people in any regular way, like FDR did with his famous fireside chats. He didn't hold press conferences. And so even though he was doing some good things, the communication, the messaging fell behind. And then I see we've had a lot of messages from Chad, who was saying this pardon, Joe Biden's pardon of his son, Hunter, was another act of hypocrisy by the Democrats, another act of favoritism by the elite, taking care of their own families. Let me know what you think about that at 855-752-4842. Here's my view. As a dad, I'd have done it in a heartbeat. I'd have pardoned my son quicker than you can, you know, say goodbye. Because one of the powers the president had is to pardon anybody. And if you're not going to use that power to help your own family, especially someone who's been suffering and dealt with a lot of adversities trying to get his act together, you know, what good is it? The only thing I'd have done different, a couple things I would have done differently. First of all, I wouldn't have lied ahead of time that I was going to pardon him. All Biden had to say was, I'll take into consideration all requests for pardons between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, the typical time when presidents decide whether they should pardon or not. And the other thing in his statement, you know, I wouldn't have gotten into, well, this was a wrongful prosecution on the Justice Department's part, because who did that sound like? That sounded like Trump. All he had to say is, look, I'm a dad. My son's been in trouble. He's getting his life together. I want to help him out. Here's a pardon. And boom, I don't think many people could have found a lot of fault with that. Maybe Chad, but, you know, I do think, I don't know a lot of dads who wouldn't have done it. Chad said, my son doesn't need to be, or is quoting, my son doesn't need to be held accountable. Not sure what he's talking about there exactly. I think maybe he's saying some dads would say, you know, you made the mistake, you deal with the consequences, boom, and be a, you know, take the hard line on that. But that's not what I think most dads would do if they had this power. I do think it does feed into what Chad was talking about, though, which is this idea that, you know, those who have the power, you know, get away with things that the rest of us don't. And also, the lying about it ahead of time is really troublesome because it fuels the impression, and it's a wrong impression, that all politicians are the same, all politicians lie, all politicians are out for themselves, can't believe any politicians, the whole thing is corrupt, every single politician is the same. And it's just not true. I mean, you know, Mark Pocan, my representative in the House of Representatives, isn't like that. I knew Russ Feingold. He wasn't like that. I know Tammy Baldwin. She's not like that. So by fueling this idea that all politicians are the same, it gives, first of all, it's a falsehood. Secondly, it gives an out to someone who plays the outsider like Trump does, you know. And Trump says, well, I'm not a politician. I'm not like everybody else in Washington. That helped him the first time. Actually, I think it helped him the second time. But you know, who's Trump to talk, though? I mean, he's giving Jared Kushner's, you know, he pardoned Jared Kushner's dad, and now he gives him ambassador to France. I mean, it's not like Joe Biden said Hunter should be ambassador to Ireland. So, look, we got to look at this in a humane way. I think Joe Biden did what most humane dads would do. But there was no reason for him to lie about it in the first place. This is part of the Joe Biden clumsiness that's so adversely affected Kamala Harris's chances. And I think when we look back, that's going to be the real story, that and the role of inflation and some of the nasty ads that Trump played. You know, Biden not getting out of the race the first time, Biden not being able to communicate because the staff kept him in a closet under wraps because they were worried he was going to stumble if they let him out of the closet, which he probably would have. And then, you know, Biden saying a week before the election that all Trump supporters are trash or garbage. That was awful. That was the Hillary Clinton basket of deplorables mistake. We're going to keep making the same mistake and castigating whole millions upon millions of people, name calling them, which only, you know, pushes them further and further into the Trump cult. I mean, that's not how we should do politics. Here in Wisconsin, we don't do a lot of name calling here, not on civic media. It's not what we try to do. We try to have civic dialogue. We take phone calls from people who disagree with us. We try to handle those with grace. If you want to call in, if you're a Trump supporter, 855-752-4842. I'll take your call, hear what you have to say, as long as you keep it civil. We believe in civil dialogue here at Civic Media because one thing we need to do here in Wisconsin is talk to people who didn't vote the way we wanted them to vote for. We have to recognize that, you know, more than half the people who voted for Donald Trump, not only in Wisconsin, but around the country. So how do we have that conversation? And it's not by labeling people as bad or terrible or trash like Biden did. We've got to find another way to talk to people. And part of it starts with listening. We need to listen first, then respond, engage principally with people, try to establish relationship with people, not people flying Nazi flags or Confederate flags, don't get me wrong, but the vast majority of the people who voted for Trump are not flying those Confederate flags, do not, you know, wear swastikas on their biceps. That's not what happened. Yes, there are fascists and racists in this country, and we have to defeat them, but not everyone, not most, who voted for Trump are in that camp. So we need to engage in conversations and join organizations that are doing good work and support those organizations on Giving Tuesday tomorrow. So I hope you'll call 855-752-4842. We're going to continue this conversation on Matinee on Air with an old friend of mine, an old progressive, an old Democrat, Billy Feitlinger. He'll be joining me right after the break, so please stay tuned.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has announced the Wisconsin State Park System will be moving to a 12-month admission pass model. 12-month admission passes will be available for purchase beginning today. The new pass model is valid for 12 months following the month of purchase rather than expiring on December 31st. The 2025 passes purchased this month will be valid through January 2026. A 12-month admission pass costs $28 for vehicles with Wisconsin license plates or $38 for vehicles with out-of-state plates. The physical appearance of the pass has also been updated. In addition to being slightly larger, the 12 months of the year will be listed around the perimeter of the pass. Beginning in 2025, the pass will be marked to indicate the month and year in which the pass will expire. The pass remains valid until the final day of the 12th month following the month in which it is issued. For example, a pass that is marked to expire March 2026 will be valid through March 31st, 2026. Reduced rate vehicle admission passes will still be available for additional vehicles registered to the same address. Reduced rate passes must be purchased at the same time as the full price pass or at a later date with proof of purchase of the full price vehicle pass. Passes for additional vehicles will expire in the same month and year as the household's full price pass. A vehicle admission pass is required on all motor vehicles stopping in state parks, forest, and recreation areas. Customers are encouraged to save time by buying their passes online. Orders placed online will receive an email receipt with a confirmation number that can be used immediately for park entry. 12-month vehicle admission passes purchased online will be delivered pre-marked with the expiration month and year according to the date of purchase.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, Glickin' Weekend's box office haul turned out to be no match for that of Barbenheimer's, but it was still impressive and helped the holiday box office get off to a great start. As expected, Wicked landed in the top spot with a take of $114 million, more than doubling Gladiator 2's haul of $56 million at the gate. Gladiator 2, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, and Pedro Pascal, was never expected to be the top dog, as it was always Oppenheimer to Wicked's Barbie. Wicked slightly exceeded expectations with its box office haul, whereas Gladiator 2 came in just under its expectations. This is becoming a trend in Hollywood where two films coming out at the same time were not necessarily competing against each other, but help each other create a social media phenomenon. Landing in third place in week two of its release was Red One with $13 million. Rounding out the top five were Bonhoeffer, Pastor Spy Assassin, and the resilient Venom, The Last Dance, which came in fifth place with $4 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy with a few flurries this morning, gradually becoming partly cloudy by later this afternoon. Our high today, 29, the wind northwest at 5 to 15. Tonight, 17. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 29 on Wednesday. Mostly cloudy, breezy with light snow and a high in the mid-30s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 18.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it. All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time, an all-new live show back in the studio. Join us for a look back at the holiday weekend and prepare you for the week ahead.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Good
Good morning. I hope it's getting better. Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Jane Matinere on her terrific show, Matinere on Air, that she does with Greg Bach. They're off today. They'll be back tomorrow. The number to call here is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You can also text, as we've been getting texts from Tom and Chad this morning. Happy to take your texts, and I'll hope to get an opportunity to read them on the air. But I'm joined right now by an old friend of mine. His name is Billy Feitlinger. Billy worked for Russ Feingold and for Dane County execs Rick Phelps and Kathleen Falk. He was elected to Madison's Common Council three times in the 80s and served as president of the council in 83. And from 2005 to 2016, he was executive director of the Wisconsin Alliance for Retired Americans. But Billy Feitlinger can't spell retire. He was out there organizing for Kamala Harris this fall. Billy, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Matt, and it's really a pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure's all mine. Why don't you give me your reaction when Kamala Harris lost?
Well, my personal reaction was very disheartened and disappointed and angry. But, you know, weeks before the election, all I can remember is with my closest friends, I had said that, you know, if you think about it, Donald Trump in 2020 lost by three states about 45,000 votes. And that's when he basically totally mismanaged the worst pandemic in a long, long, long history of America and our world. He only lost by 45,000 votes. So I was privately not as optimistic, even though I worked my buns off and whatever I could as an old man. You know, I had my own reality check, too.
But it was so weird. I mean, he not only mismanaged the pandemic that cost, you know, more than a million people's lives here in the United States, but he was a traitor. I mean, he's going to go down in the history books as a traitor. He was the guy who tried to overturn a democratically elected president of the United States, Joe Biden. And yet here we have a majority of the voting public choosing him again. It's just so hard to wrap my mind around that. How do you wrap your mind around it?
Well, first place is, you know, since November 5th, the data doesn't show that he won a majority. Now, granted, he won. He won a fair and open election, different than 2020, as you suggested in your comments. So as I see it is that we have a lot of work ahead of us, but don't want to throw everything out that we have accomplished in the past. And looking at the future, what are the issues? Well, the first place you start with is how do we rebuild the coalition? We have to have a 50-state solution. We shouldn't be putting aside certain states. There's no doubt about it. But before we get to that grandiose and very difficult task, we must at least rebuild the coalition, which is hard enough to do.
And how do you do that?
Well, first place, I don't have all the answers. Let me be real clear about that.
Come on, I brought you on for all the answers.
Yeah, though I don't have all the answers, and I'm not one of the insiders to have all the data. But clearly, there are certain basic things. Do we show to people, the working class in our country, that we really truly do care? My belief and what bothers me the most is if you look at the Democratic Party versus the Republican Party, my belief still is that Democratic Party is the party of the working class. The problem is that's not what the working class is telling us today in 50 states in our country.
We're not making the sales somehow.
We're absolutely not making the sales, even though I think the Biden administration did a number of very, very, very positive things for the working class. But as you just said, we're not selling it. That's one thing. And the two, we're clearly not showing to people that we truly do care about people who are working every day or working two jobs a day or working three jobs over a week. And we have to come and do a better job of that. We need to communicate. We need to have programs. We need to really work hard at making sure the day-to-day activities are being met by specific legislation, whether it be at the federal, state, or local levels.
I think part of the problem was that Biden was and his staff were crowing about the macroeconomic statistics. We're better than any of the European countries. We got out of the COVID period with without a recession. We're having a soft landing, and then citing, you know, macroeconomic statistics that are meaningless to people when their rent has gone up a lot.
Right.
And when gas early on was high, though it's gone down now. But car insurance is super high. You know, groceries are high. And so, you know, that didn't really compute for people.
And, you know, to be quite frank, I probably bought into that as well. I'm talking about myself now. And, you know, the reality is until June 26th of this year, I really thought that not only Joe Biden, he is go down as a good president. He made many mistakes. One of the mistakes he clearly made was he shouldn't have been running again until June 27th,
right,
when he had that terrible debate. But I also bought into that. I really think he could have still won. And that was a reality that just wasn't true.
You don't buy into that still?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely. No, I'm saying
at the time.
At the time, I want to be real frank,
right,
that I thought on June 26th he could still make a go of it and still win this election. I was wrong.
Well, you didn't have the information. None of us had the information about how out of it he was. I mean, that debate was just self-immolation.
And so part of it truly is, when you talk about selling, is the messenger. And the messenger has to be somebody, man or woman, who can really lay out in a very concise way what they are willing to do for working families in our country. And I think if we had a better messenger during that time, maybe things might have been a little different. But I'm still not convinced based on what I just said to you.
Right.
I think we have a bigger issue, which is, why is it that Donald Trump received 2 million more votes in 2024 than 2020? Why is it that 7 million more Americans decided not to vote in 2024 than in 2020? And what population, what voters should we, the Democratic Party or the progressive community, be targeting to try to change their minds? Versus, there is a group of people in our country, I'm not sure at this point, as really an optimistic kind of guy, want to spend a lot of time right now working towards trying to change their minds, because they don't, we're not on the same, facts are not, don't matter to some people.
I mean, it is hard. It's hard in so many ways. And I've had the maybe short-sighted view or egotistical view that if I'm nice to people who I know vote for Trump, if I befriend them and talk to them reasonably about issues and listen to them, that eventually I'm going to bring them around. I don't think I've brought them around yet. I can't. Maybe there are a few people. It's just hard to know. And so the question is then, who do you talk to? Who do you spend your energies on? And then there's the question of whether the Liz Cheney strategy was the right strategy,
right,
for Democrats, whether having this big coalition from Liz Cheney to Bernie Sanders and AOC was working, or whether Liz Cheney turned people off. Certainly Dick Cheney turned people off.
Right.
And so...
So again, on that particular one, I want to put it on the right out there, is that I thought part of the strategy of bringing in people like Liz Cheney was a good thing.
I bought into it too, but I'm not sure the facts at the end of the day bear us out.
Right, I understand that. I'm just want to be clear about who I am. And the bottom line is, as a former organizer, you got to start, and what I was saying before was, you have to start with the base. And that means to me, people who we share common ground with, but decided for whatever reasons, either not to vote or to, some of them, vote for Trump, particularly as an example, union members who clearly have an invested interest in collective bargaining and things of that sort. So I think I would start with that population of voters before we go to the 50-state strategy of trying to, because I've always believed, as I was growing up, that having different views, political views, is okay. But we got to start with the same facts. And that is really what I'm really worried about, that we can't come together, whether we agree on the politics or the policies, on the same facts.
Well, that raises a whole separate issue, because, you know, there are two separate media universes that people are living in right now. And Jane Mantenere was talking about that in that little interview I did with her in the last half hour. And so then it's hard, you know, you're in different worlds, and it's actually hard to communicate because you say X and they say Y, or you say X and they say negative X. I mean, it's just, it's bizarro land.
And what's really troublesome to me is when I hear people say that Donald Trump was a successful businessman. That is furthest from the truth. If you look at the facts, he was not a successful businessman. Six bankruptcies, got over $400 million from his father on years ago term money. But the reality was, when he came into office in 2016, he came into office on the Obama's last 3 years. So he did fine. He did fine in terms of what it mattered to looking at how much jobs were created, the economic growth. But my question, and one of the frustrating things, is he never changed the income inequalities. He never made any changes like that. So where do we go with the working class and people losing jobs, which, if you look at this administration, the Biden administration, increased the number of jobs by almost 16 million. And now, granted, that had some of the jobs that were lost during the pandemic. Donald Trump, at the end of his term, had the worst economic job creation since Herbert Hoover. So when we talk about what we need to do, what's puzzling to me is I want to meet every day, if I was still young and was a politician or a non-politician, an organizer, meet with people to figure out what exactly do you want and what do you need?
I think part of it, though, is Trump is a snake oil salesman, and he
a master.
And he talked about, you know, he talked to some working class folks right away. We're not going to tax your tips. And for people who are working in restaurants or doing other jobs where they get tips, you know, that was something he was addressing that, you know, they could feel. And then he also attacked the trade deals, Bill Clinton's NAFTA. And he was right to attack that. J.D. Vance was right to attack that. So they're, you know, they had similar critiques of the trade deals that Bernie had. And right. So this was a way that Trump was, to use an old Bill Clinton term, was triangulating. He was going after the natural base of the Democratic Party, and it seemed to have worked. It worked on November 5th, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But again, a reminder, he won the election fair and square, which is different than when he and his allies were talking about in 2020. But the landslide didn't exist. Now, as a former politician, I understand you want to exaggerate. And as you just said a few minutes ago, he's a master marketer, a master. Well, when you lie and you exaggerate, and in this case, when you have only won by 1.5% or less in the margin of the national results between Harris and Trump, that's no landslide. In fact, it's the third worst in terms of since the 1900s in terms of victories from a presidential campaign. Now, he won, and he won decisively, but not a mandate.
No, but they always claim a mandate. I remember right. when, you know, Bush Cheney won, they, you know, by the grace of the Supreme Court or by the notorious actions of the U.S. Supreme Court. And then right after that decision, some pundits were saying, oh, there should be a coalition government, or Cheney and Bush should, you know, work through the middle. And no, they said, we got a mandate and we're going to go far right. And that's what they did.
As we reflect.
Yeah, go ahead.
As we reflect, just we want to make sure we have the right, correct data as we try to make changes to do a better job the next time.
And we'll come back with Billy Feitlinger. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to pick up the conversation in just a minute. Yes, I admit it's getting better.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Harbor Freight knows tool people like to keep busy. But with our Black Friday sale now through Monday, you'll want to free up some time. We're talking deals like our 5,000-watt generators under $800, 17-foot reach ladders for $99.99, and 40% off Icon Pro socket sets. Whatever you do, do it for less at Harbor Freight. Valid until 12/2/24. While supplies last, limitations apply.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As Democrats pick up the pieces from their loss to Donald Trump, one of the first major decisions the party will be making is to select its new chair. The race for that role might just have a major Wisconsin connection. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is a potential candidate for chair of the DNC. A source close to Wickler said he is seriously considering running. One Democratic source characterized Wickler as a Goldilocks candidate for the position. He's liked by both centrists and progressives, big dollar donors and grassroots organizers, and knows how important state parties around the country can be in a second Trump term. So, could he be just right for the role? The vote for DNC chair is scheduled for February 13th. A lot can happen between now and then, but this story will certainly be one to watch for Democratic politics in the state of Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
News from the Center, WRCE.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you this morning. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. Jane and Greg are off today. They'll be back tomorrow. I encourage you to call 855-752-4842 if you want to join the conversation or text. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I'm here with an old friend of mine, Billy Feitlinger, who used to work for Russ Feingold and Rick Phelps and Kathleen Falk and did a lot of work organizing retired Americans here in Wisconsin. And, you know, about a month before the election, Billy calls me up and he says, Matt, are you busy this morning? I said, no. What do you need? He says, well, we're putting signs together for Kamala Harris. Why don't you come over to this garage and put these signs together? So that's what we did. Didn't turn out the way we wanted. I had convinced myself that she was going to win, and I was kind of crushed that she didn't. But we're moving on, and one person who may be moving on is Ben Wickler. How do you assess Ben Wickler's talents and his chances of becoming national DNC chair?
Well, obviously he's got a good chance, but Ben Wickler is the real deal. We got a gold treasurer right here in Wisconsin. I first met Ben in 2018, had a cup of coffee with him. I thought, boy, this guy knows what he's up to and knows what to do. But I have to admit, besides his political, his fundraising, his organizing skills, he brings a personal attribute that I think is really, really, really important to make a really whole person of. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, every human being has flaws. But I got to tell you, Ben Wickler is the real deal.
And what is that personal attribute or one of the personal attributes that sticks out so much to you?
Well, I think, first, he's a totally honest guy, very direct, no BS. And he also has a way of explaining things to the average citizen or people like myself who have not been a part of the inner circles in a way that explains things very clear to me in a very factual way. And I also think he brings a patience and a way of a very level-headed guy who has all these great skills, you know, like I said, that I think will be very advantageous at the national level if he is successful, which I think he has a good chance of being very successful. Obviously, from a personal, selfish reason, we have an upcoming election. And I worry about the April election because of all the work that he and his team and all of us around the state over many, many, many years since he's been the chair, where we got to win the Supreme Court race. It's crucial because of people like yourself, Matt, and others like you in whole issue of mapping and things of that sort, fair mapping, is crucial to keep on making the change that we'll need in our state legislature, as well as on the whole issue of reproductive rights, if we don't have a Supreme Court that is open to the law.
Yeah, and that race this April is between Susan Crawford, a liberal judge here in Madison, against the odious Brad Schimmel, who was Attorney General under Walker, who gave a slap on the wrist to Jensen rather than, enforcing the law on Jensen, and is just a very unpleasant person. But yeah, the balance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court hangs on that election in April. And right now, we're four liberals and three conservatives, and the liberal justice is stepping down. And so it's 3-3, depending on who wins that race in April.
So obviously, from a selfish perspective, I worry about our state because you're going to have to transition pretty quickly. After February 1st is when the DNC chair will be decided nationally. And I hope Ben Wickler wins. But there's a selfish reason, in a personal way, that I worry about it, because we're going to have to transition pretty quickly into how we deal with this important race that you just mentioned, Matt.
Yeah, we would need to have a good successor in place. I hope Ben has someone in mind, or that the Democrats in Wisconsin, and I'm not in those closed-door meetings, have someone in mind who can take over quickly. I know they're just tremendous organizers across the board in one organization after another here in this state who've been doing the good work, deep canvassing in Jefferson County, deep canvassing with Block in Milwaukee, deep canvassing in rural western Wisconsin. And that's very important. By deep canvassing, I mean not just knocking on doors 3 weeks before the election saying, vote
that's
for
right.
this Democratic candidate, but getting to know the voters, going back to them. You've done a lot of work at the grassroots level. What's that like?
Well, especially the last 11 years of before I retired full-time work, I worked for the Alliance of Retired Americans. And I learned a lot going around the state, not only regarding retiree issues, whether it be at the state or federal level, but also how seniors looked at other issues besides that. And so, yeah, I mean, I met a whole range of different people, some of whom agree with me and some of whom did not agree with me. And it was really enlightening for myself, because I think one of the things that Ben did when he became the chair was look at blue, red, and purple counties around the state and try to target as much as possible as many of those different places around the state, not just in Dane County, not just in Milwaukee County. And as you can see by the record, he was incredibly successful. So here I am, I'm marketing this guy who I think is the real deal to be the national chair. On the other hand, I worry.
Yeah, I worry too. Of course, I'm a worrier. I worry about everything. That's why I'm up at 3 a.m, can't get back to sleep. But look, Ben would be a huge asset to the Democratic Party. He's got vision. He's got great media skills, great communication skills, great fundraising skills, and he's got the record to run on it. So I hope he gets it. He deserves it. I'd like to
absolutely.
See
him. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Wisconsin getting what they deserve. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. I'm Matt Rothschild. Thanks, Billy Feitlinger, for being my guest this
Thanks,
half
Matt.
Hour.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. It's great.
And we'll be right back around the corner.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Dom Selvia.
Just PS, Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.